This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Play Travis on the Bud Light Hotline, FS1. We'll lock it in every single day at 3:30. Also, you can hear him on Fox Sports Radio, OutkickTheCoverage.com, at Clay Travis on Twitter. And his book is Republicans Buy Sneakers Too. Hello, Clay.
What an intro.
It is a huge intro.
How are you guys?
Clay does a lot of things. Great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good.
Back from the Super Bowl. Did LT end up going? Were you there in the crowd?
Lance? Yeah, I was there, Clay. I made the mistake of pulling the trigger on that ticket, and I was there, and obviously a disappointing result.
Did you go one ticket, or did you buy multiple, and what did you have to pay to get in?
I don't want to divulge. You and I can talk after. I did buy two tickets, and in retrospect, bad purchase.
Yeah.
At least I got to see 3 points in Maroon 5, right?
Yeah, you're talking to a guy who lost $30,000 on the Saints Rams game. So trust me, I know the feeling of money that was basically thrown away. At least you got the experience of being there.
At least. So excited. A couple of things coming out of that game. You know, first of which, and I told this story yesterday on the air when I checked in with the guys on my way back from Atlanta. I sat next to this really nice couple from Boston, younger couple, and they're season ticket holders, but this was their first Super Bowl experience. And dude has on an Edelman jersey. And I told him how much I respect the organization, like Tom Brady, but the one guy I don't like is Julian Edelman. This is before the game, and of course he goes on and wins the MVP. But that guy before the game had said something that was brought up last week, and he said, how can you not like Edelman? He is going to be a Hall of Famer. And I told him, I said, you are insane. You can love the guy all you want, but there are 15 active wide receivers in the NFL right now that are better than Julian Edelman.
Well, I think the challenge is the slot wide receiver position is really something that has exploded in what, like the last 8 to 10 years? So I think we have this traditional thought of, you know, the out wide receiver, DeAndre Hopkins, big physical. And I know DeAndre Hopkins not necessarily a big physical guy, but, you know, the Randy Moss type wide receiver who can stretch the field, who can take the top off the defense, who is uncoverable one-on-one streaking down the field. And I think we think about those guys, and there are not a lot of them, you know, that have been in that mold. Calvin Johnson as our prototypical wide receiver Hall of Famers. But I think you have to look at some of the numbers that these slot receivers post. And it is a crazy stat, but Brady did not have a lot of weapons at the wide receiver, especially once Josh Gordon was not able to get his life turned around with the New England Patriots organization. And Edelman went for 10 catches for 141 in that game. The rest of the Patriot wide receivers, Dorsett, Hogan, and Cordarrelle Patterson, they combined to catch 2 passes for 14 yards. Now, a lot of times you talk about how a quarterback makes a wide receiver, and I think there's a lot of evidence of that in NFL history. But other than Julian Edelman, Tom Brady had no targets. And you can say he could throw to James White, he could throw to out of the backfield to those guys. He could obviously hand off to Sony Michel, and Gronk is a playmaker at tight end. But I'm kind of inclined that the game has changed enough that you almost don't need to think about Julian Edelman as a wide receiver. You need to think about him as a slot receiver. And if you do that, there's not a lot of guys who are capable of doing what he does on a night-in, night-out basis. And evidently, it's almost impossible to find guys to cover him because, look, the guy wasn't just open in those games. Almost every time Tom Brady threw to him, he was wide open. And that is a rare attribute and skill set.
Clay Travis is with us, Fox Sports, just back from the Super Bowl. You're always a good big picture guy when it comes to television, the business, and the industry. The ratings down, worst Super Bowl rated since 2007. Is that something we should be concerned with, or is that just the ebb and flow of Super Bowl ratings?
Well, I would be concerned if the overall ratings had been down in the regular season, too, for a third straight year. Remember, they dipped 20% in the wake of the Colin Kaepernick protest controversy and I think the NFL becoming intensely political. I thought they almost wiped out all politics from the game this year, not meaning the Super Bowl, meaning the NFL regular season. And I tend to think this was just a reaction to a game that wasn't very entertaining. And I think if these two teams, I think if, for instance, we had gotten Chiefs against the Rams again, I think there would have been a lot more interest in that. So I'd want to see the long-range trend lines, but certainly being down under 100 million viewers is not ideal for the NFL, but I'd want to see multi-years of it declining more so than judging any one individual year.
Clay Travis with us on the Bud Light Hotline, OutKick, and many other outlets, and you can follow him on Twitter, at Clay Travis. So ESPN fires Adnan Virk for leaking company information. I know I texted you. I wonder how many people, and it's come out now, Awful Announcing was the website he was leaking to, not OutKick. But I wonder, other than me, how many people texted you thinking he got fired for leaking info to you?
Yeah, a decent number, but I haven't really had any. You assume when you get fired for leaking info that it has to be relatively recent. I'm sure some people out there thought of me because I've had several scoops from inside ESPN. I think this is a bad look for ESPN personally, especially because they leaked all the information about firing him for leaking. You know, ESPN, imagine what they would cover if they never got leaks from inside of companies, you know, teams. I mean, there would be a lot less actual news that they had to cover if they never were able to chase down leads like these. Personally, I have never been a source quoted in an anonymous news article ever in my entire life. And that's because if I have an opinion that I feel strongly enough about that I want to be quoted on it, I always quote it myself, right? Like, I just tell you exactly what I think. But I do believe that sometimes, and it sounds like he was maybe fighting to try to keep Baseball Tonight on the air at ESPN, I do believe sometimes that a leak like that can be valuable, because he couldn't come out and say on his Twitter feed, probably, I disagree with my boss's decisions, and I think this is what it was about, to cancel Baseball Tonight. I think it's a really good show. I know there are a lot of fans out there. Instead of being able to say that, if he leaks it to a website like Awful Announcing that can reach a large number of baseball fans, then maybe you can go out and save the show that you think ESPN should still be doing. So I understand the motivation there to leak it. I think it's a little bit strange that ESPN fired him over this. That seems like an outrageously overreactive decision to a story like this. If he were passing along information that's not true, or if he had regularly been putting out things about his coworkers or things like that, then I would understand the decision more. But I don't think ESPN has disputed the accuracy of the story, really, that they are moving against the idea of having a nightly baseball show.
Clay, speaking of ESPN, one of their top stories today, sad story, and I didn't realize this, Linda Goldblum, a mother of three and a grandmother of seven, died back in August after being hit by a foul ball during a Dodgers game. And I read this morning while going through that article, only the third spectator in the 150 years of Major League Baseball to die from a foul ball. That's a little surprising.
Yeah, that's hard to believe.
Stunning. I mean, I think it's stunning that hasn't happened more often. And I even, a lot of times when I buy tickets, even with the, especially when you consider that in the 150 years, how many years have we had modern netting, you know, set up to try to protect people? I assume they have always had, like, the netting behind home plate. I'm assuming. I don't know. Like, back when Babe Ruth played, did they have the netting set up, or somebody just fouled one directly behind home plate? Surely they had the netting.
No, they had to have the netting, or nobody's sitting back there.
Well, in a lot of those parks, too, the seats were way behind home plate, but you could still get hit.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Maybe that's the reason why, because they didn't have the netting up, so you had to be able to protect guys more so. But I try to think, like, when you see those old pictures, I'm trying to remember whether it's noticeable that there's netting behind those guys when they're, like, you know, batting practice. But I'm assuming they had some netting up. I think about that a lot. You know, hockey's had issues with that, with the puck getting shot into the crowd, and obviously there've been people severely injured by hockey pucks. I think about it as a dad. You know, when you take your kids to a baseball game, I don't really want to be down the first base or third base line where I know somebody could rip one, you know, right into the crowd. I'm a little bit surprised that it doesn't happen more often to the players themselves in the dugout. You know, like, you see some of those balls go screaming into the dugout sometimes, and it's always a little bit surprised to me that guys don't get hit more often there. Or even, you know, you'll see the first and third base coach sometimes move when the power hitter comes up, you know, where they want a little bit more space to be able to react to a rope that one of those guys might rip down the line. But, yeah, that surprises me that only three.
Yeah. Not long ago when the Nationals came to Atlanta, I got tickets on the second row behind the Nationals dugout. And it was my wife, my oldest daughter, and me very early regretted that decision. It's an awful place to sit.
Yeah, I just think it's stressful.
Yeah, it is.
It's one thing if you're with adults, like you can kind of keep your eye on what's going on. But if you've ever been at a ballpark with kids and, you know, like you're trying to get them a hot dog or you're trying to, you know, make sure that their drink lid is on or whatever it is, you're not as aware of what's going on around you when you have to worry about your kids. And so I 100% always think about that. And when we have gone to baseball games, try to put them in a place where I'm like, you know, I'm not going to be necessarily plugged in watching every pitch. You know, it's hard to be a parent and be aware not only of what's going on with your kids, but also of everything that's going on around you. And let's be honest, you know who's the worst at that? Dads.
Yep.
Because moms are a lot better, it seems like to me, at being aware of like all the circumstances that are going on surrounding them. Dad is oftentimes just totally oblivious to what's going on, especially if he's at a sporting event, he's got a beer. That's a tough situation. Seems like a recipe for disaster.
Thank you, Clay. Have a great week.
Hey, same to y'all. See ya.
All right, at Clay Travis on Twitter. Go get his book, Republicans Buy Sneakers 2. He was with us on the Bud Light Hotline.
Always get Lance's lock on Twitter, @TheLanceTaylor.